it's such a cerebral experience when you drink a good glass of wine, because you're picking out all of these nuances and you're paying attention to how it makes you feel. And, you know, you might have a sip of a wine and go back 20, 30 minutes later and it's opened up and it's starting to show different flavors. And it just, it is a really fun, thought-provoking experience.
Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Next Gen Podcast, a conversational series with members from Energen Wealth Partners at UBS. With an understanding of the family dynamics that can accompany multi-generational wealth, we are experienced in working with you and your family to develop a strategic plan to guide your decisions. Our approach helps provide education across generations to help define and support your long-term vision for your wealth.
Welcome to the Next Gen Podcast. I'm your host, Brandi Rochelle, financial advisor with Energen Wealth Partners here at UBS Financial Services. Our office is located in Dayton, Ohio, and you can reach us at energen@ubs.com. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Lauren Gay, the visionary behind Joy Wine, a thriving wine shop based in Dayton, Ohio. Lauren has been making waves in the wine industry with her innovative approach and commitment to quality. We're excited to dive into her journey, the story behind Joy Wine, and what the future holds for this remarkable brand. So grab a glass of your favorite wine and join us for an inspiring conversation. Lauren, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I wanted to introduce our listeners to you and to your restaurant or wine bar. I think we can call it either. You have a nice menu of food that I've reviewed. What inspired you to start your own wine shop? And can you tell us a little about your journey and your background?
Sure. So my journey and my background that brought me to this space right now is it actually started here in Dayton. I was born and raised in just north of Dayton. I went to Northmont, K-12. Went to Ohio State, studied business marketing and music. I thought I wanted to work for a record label and get into the music industry. Did a short stint in the Peace Corps and lived in Kenya for a few years, and then went to LA to pursue that music industry career, which for better or worse didn't really pan out. I had gotten a job just within the first week of being in LA, working in restaurants, which I had always done, and happened to land a job with a few really influential and wonderful chefs. So I worked for Mario Batali, Nancy Silverton, and Joe Bastianich at one of their restaurants in Hollywood. And I thought it was just going to be a temporary stopgap to make some money while I had this internship with a record label, and really kind of captivated me that that job was much different than any other hospitality job I had had. First of all, working for some very talented chefs was really inspiring, and working with a talented wine director was highly influential for me. Sarah, the wine director there, kind of took me under her wing. She saw that I was very curious and asking a lot of questions about wine, and she very much encouraged me to pursue my sommelier certification. So that's when it all started, circa 2014, back in Los Angeles. I got my level one certification through the Court of Master Sommeliers, and the rest is kind of history. I definitely gave up on intentions of having a career in the music industry at that point. So lived in LA, worked there for a few years, and then my partner and I at the time decided to sell everything, get an RV, and travel the United States for about a year and a half. And we started a blog that was focused on travel and booze and a little bit about food and hospitality as well. So we kind of learned the ins and outs of social media, photography, videography, did that, stopped in Mexico City for a few months even. It was really a wonderful, very inspiring trip. And then got wind of a really cool project that was coming to fruition here in Dayton. And that's the launch of Tender Mercy and Sueño, hosted by the Idea Collective. So came home to Dayton just on a whim and met them and became really, really passionate about what they were doing for downtown Dayton in particular, and kind of just wanted to be a part of this transformation and this growth that was happening in my hometown. So decided to move back to Dayton, hitched my cart onto them essentially, and helped them get Tender Mercy started. And Sueño eventually. That was during precarious times with the pandemic and everything. So I did a brief stint where I went back to California and worked in a wine cellar while we were kind of just waiting for the world to return to normalcy.
Yes.
And they're wonderful people. I still actually consult with them and do their wine and beer list for Tina Mercy, Sueño Dozo, and then their upcoming project called Three Birds. But they're wonderful. And there was an agreement that we had that if I kind of helped them get started, they would help me with my own project, which I, throughout my wine journey, had known that I wanted to try to do something on my own. I had oftentimes worked for other people and helping them achieve their goals or bring their ideas to fruition. And I really just wanted to do it for myself once.
Yes.
So they were true to their word. They helped me with everything from the design work to getting permits and finding a construction team. And Joy Wine would not be alive today if it weren't for their assistance and their guidance and supervision.
Wow. So you've not been doing much. It sounds like you've just been sitting on your hands for the last 10 years.
It's wow. Hustle time right now.
Now it's a full-time life, right? Like yeah. You eat, sleep, and breathe Joy Wine.
To a certain extent, yes. There's also another business that's in the works right now that should be open this summer called Swoon Books and Wine. And it is...
I love that! I was about to ask you about books. I'm like, it just goes hand in hand.
Yes. So that's opening in Oakwood. Hopefully this summer we are about to start construction, hopefully any day now. And it was kind of just an offhand joke where this time with Swoon, I'm doing it with a business partner. Her name's Lindsay. She's the owner of Mara Luna. And she had a lease on the space and mentioned that she's just got the entrepreneurial bug and she's got this itch to maybe start something else. And she was talking about a bookstore. And I just jokingly said, well, if you want to put a wine bar in the back of it, let me know. And she called me back a few days later and she was like, yes, I do. Let's do it.
That's brilliant. Because you go into a lot of bookstores, you got coffee shops. And right. I love coffee. Don't get me wrong. But coffee more like energizes me. So I don't want to sit and read my book because I'm all pumped up to go do stuff.
Yeah.
But if you give me a glass of wine, I'll be sitting there for a while with my book.
Yeah, same.
That's perfect. Exciting. So lots going on.
Lots going on for sure.
So when you look back over all of it and you kind of just said, you know, I thought I was going to end up in the music industry, but here I am. Was there any of that you would change?
Oh, man. That's a profound question. Sometimes I do think about that and I wish that I would have given it a little bit more of an effort to make it work in the music industry, but my life would be so different. You know, all of these building blocks that have piled one on top of another to get me to where I am today with, you know, with my partner that I'm with today and my friends that I'm with today and close to my family too, all of that would be different. So although I don't feel like I gave that industry a full-fledged effort, I think that maybe it was meant to be this way and I'm happy. So,
right. Cause then you wouldn't have met the chefs and the sommelier who encouraged you to pursue your passion with wine.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. Looking back, there's little things along the way. Not many of us can say we gave it a shot in Hollywood. So I give you props for that. But then it led you to your true passion. And music is, you can still tie music into the business, right? I mean, you have events there at the restaurant.
Yeah, we very much do tie music in. That was a very important element of Joy. There's a really wonderful sound system. We've got a vinyl record player that actually Bluetooth ties into our music system. We have had several live bands, acoustic nights, DJ dance parties. So that's always been a major part of kind of creating the atmosphere and the ambiance of Joy, for sure.
That's wonderful. Now, looking back to your time in Kenya, Do you look back and remember things that taught you too about, I think sustainability is a big part of what you do with your wines. Is that kind of where that stemmed from, seeing what you saw when you were in Kenya?
I think that definitely has something to do with it. I remember coming home from Kenya and I was washing dishes with my mom and she just left the water running. And I remember thinking, how many trips would it have taken my host family down to the stream to like haul back that much water. And those are the kinds of things that you witness and kind of never leave you. So for sure, definitely kind of environmental preservation and things that are fair trade, you know, wine, like any industry, you want to make sure that how it's being produced is done in a favorable way to the employees. So there's all of these little nuances that go into any industry. And we really show what we care about with our dollars and what we choose to buy and supporting companies that are doing good things.
Amazing. Absolutely. And then you were an early vlogger, I guess, right? Because I mean, I know a lot of people in the middle of COVID said, well, why not? Let's just jump into a van and record our lives on the road. But you were doing that pre-COVID.
Yeah, for a little bit. It was definitely a dream, and I'm so happy that I did it. I got to see parts of the United States that you don't get to see unless you're traveling in an RV. You know, it's not close to any airport. Stumbled upon magical places that weren't even a planned part of the destination at all. So it was really wonderful. But what they don't show you on the van life blogs or the Instagrams is it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. It's a lot of finding water sources and dumping tanks and charging batteries. And it's actually not as glamorous as it looks.
The magic of editing, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So when I think about when you said during COVID, you went back to Napa Valley and actually fermented grapes, worked at the winery. What's it called? A cellar internship?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I picture is what the old I Love Lucy and she's stomping the grapes with her bare feet. Did you get to do that?
So I didn't get to do that at my cellar internship. I have had the opportunity to do that somewhere else, but the place that I worked was a little bit more commercial. I went back and forth whether I wanted to try to apply for kind of a large scale winery that has highly modernized facilities and a little bit larger scale production, or if I wanted to find a very small winery that had maybe one or two interns that, you know, they were very intimately involved in every step of the process. I applied for my internship quite late, so that gave me more limited options, and I ended up going with a kind of a big commercial winery that was part of Treasury Wine Estates. And if I ever get an opportunity to do another cellar internship, I would like to go the opposite route just to see the kind of disparity between the two. But I really loved my cellar internship. The people I worked with were amazing. All of my managers, the winemaker they were just incredible to work with. So although I wasn't using my feet to stomp grapes, I was using high-tech machinery to do so. And yeah, it was kind of funny getting ready every day and putting on my knee-high galoshes and my high-vis vest. And, you know, I felt more like a construction worker than anything else.
Right. You wouldn't think that you'd need all that to go process wine. But
yeah.
I got to gear up.
Yeah.
Now, looking back at the beginning of starting Joy Wines, what was probably the most stressful part of launching the restaurant and the wine bar?
I think that starting any new business is very challenging in terms of having the steps align in such a way where you stay on time for your projections. And with hospitality in particular, there's so much hurry up and wait. You know, you come up with your business plan and you start applying for loans and then you go to underwriting and it's like, okay, well, you know, 40 to 60 days, we'll hear back. And you send out bids and quotes to contractors and then you wait for them to get back to you. And then you purchase things, you wait for them to be shipped. You apply for permits, you wait for those to get approved. You apply for inspections and you wait for those to happen. It's just a lot of hurry up and wait. And so the number one question I was asked during that process is, what's your projected open date? And I really wanted to say, I have no freaking idea.
You tell me.
I really thought the process would take a few months and it was well over a year. It's just, it was very, very detailed. The space I had also was pretty raw. I had to do drywall, restore the historic floors, install plumbing, electric, and HVAC. It was like a full build out. So
wow.
Just the amount of time and effort that went into that was, I've highly underestimated that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you took your time finding the space. You wanted to have the right location for what you wanted to open.
Correct. I didn't feel the pressure to really find something while I was in the process of working with Tender and Sueño. Once those places felt like they were open and they were steady and kind of just on autopilot, then it really kind of put the fire under my butt to find a place. And I had looked at dozens of places all around town. The location where I'm at, which is 117 East 3rd in the Fireblocks District, I do remember walking in and immediately the space had high ceilings and windows that were just being flooded in with sunlight. And I just knew that that was the spot, but it was definitely the roughest spot that I had toured, unfortunately. So it was quite the process.
You had a vision.
Yes.
So take our listeners who haven't been to your wine bar through what they experience when they walk in the doors. What do you want them to feel?
I think that a lot of wine bars and wine-oriented places historically have been geared a little bit more towards men. And so there's kind of like the dark, rich mahogany tones and association with like wine and cigars and things like that. And I wanted this to feel a little bit more inclusive and welcoming and bright and cheerful. So again, seeing this space that was filled with natural light was kind of inspiring to me and kind of ran with that. So it's bright, it's cheery, it's big and open. There's tons of bright colors. There's plants, live plants and cacti all over the place. I think there's one that's about a foot away from reaching my 25-foot ceilings at this point in time. So it's supposed to be a cheerful, happy place.
That's great. And for those of us who are wine ignorant, I think a lot of what I read was you want to make it more approachable instead of intimidating for new wine drinkers or wine, people who want to learn more about wine. So is it helpful? What do you say for like the first steps? Is there somebody here to talk with, or do you recommend that they do a tasting? How would you encourage somebody to get their feet wet?
That's a great question. I do think that wine can be intimidating, and we're trying to take the pretension out of it for sure by making it a fun space first and foremost. And so if you are interested in getting into wine, that's one reason why Joy is so great, because you can sit there and you can have a glass of wine and try it before you buy it, essentially. You can shop our retail shelves and take a glass of wine around with you as you're looking at things. And our team is also very passionate and very knowledgeable. So even though our selection is pretty limited, our team knows the inventory pretty well. And you're going to find things in Joy that you're not necessarily going to find at some of the big box stores. We try to source from small family-produced estate wineries, limited releases, things that are kind of allocated. So you're finding things that are a little bit more special. And having that sense of adventure is really, really fun. But we are there to hold your hand. We'll not frown upon any questions, because I have asked the stupidest questions you can imagine. We all have to start somewhere. And yeah, we just try to make that process really easy and fun.
So I think when you were going through getting certified with the Sommelier, what are some things you had to do? I'm curious. Do you just drink a bunch of wine and go, I think this one tastes like oak and this one tastes like cherry? What does that look like?
I mentioned that in California, I got my level one, and there's no blind tasting part of that test. It's just a written test, multiple choice. Level two is when it starts to get a lot more intimidating, and there is the blind tasting part of that exam. So that exam was a full day. It starts off at like 8 a.m. with the blind tasting part, which is just cruel and unusual punishment to anybody that works in hospitality. And they're used to going to bed very late. So, you know, waking up and doing the hardest part of the exam straight out the gate is not fun. But then the second part is going to be the written exam, which is essay, multiple choice, everything in between. And then the third part is a service exam where they have several master sommeliers that are sitting at a table. It's essentially mock service. You walk in and they say, this is the restaurant you're working at. They specialize in this and that. You have a party of 10. They're celebrating a birthday. Go take care of them. And they're going to give you orders for sake or champagne. And they're asking about tête cuvées and all of these things. So it's really just off the cuff testing your service skills. So preparation for that part of the exam comes from working in hospitality. And there's several certifying bodies for wine knowledge. I chose to go through the Court of Master Sommeliers because they are very hospitality focused and they're geared towards people that work in the restaurant industry. Nice. So the service part of the exam did kind of come naturally. I'd been working in service for long enough that a lot of it felt very, very easy. Doesn't mean I didn't still prepare and get nervous and bumble parts of it. And then the theory part, just it was a lot of going to the gym on the treadmill, doing Quizlet flashcards. I had over 1,000 different flashcards that I would just go through, and maps, and you know, just that kind of repetitive nature really helped me solidify a lot of those facts. But for the blind tasting, which is arguably the best and worst part to study for,
yes,
my process for that, it was a little bit more strategic than just tasting wines and trying to say, is it notes of cherry or oak? I think the biggest shortcut to understanding wines is learning the structural elements of wine and then kind of working backwards from there. So once you know that Sauvignon Blanc looks like this, it's this color, has this amount of acidity, and Cabernet, you know, the tannins are always high and the acidity is medium, medium plus, and the color and the concentration and all of these elements of it, before you even start to talk about how it tastes, you talk about how it feels in your mouth. And those indicators are a little bit more telling than others. So for me, step one in studying for the blind tasting exam was, again, doing flashcards. and kind of understanding how each grape expresses itself when it is turned into wine. And then starting to taste wine and making those connections with what I learned from the flashcards and what I am experiencing in the tasting. So when it came time for me to actually take the exam, I was doing an exam style blind tasting session twice a day. I set it up at my home. I bought one bottle of each different type of wine that they could put on the exam. And I had these little toppers essentially that would keep the wine good for 2 months. So I could open them all and actually reclose them and reseal them. Otherwise, I would have been spending way too much money on wine.
On wine.
So those were super helpful. But I would wake up and I would pour myself two reds and two whites out of a brown paper bag. I didn't know what they were. Sat down, turned on my timer for 20 minutes. I had the sheet. I'd go through the entire exam. First thing I did when I woke up.
Wow.
And then at the end of the day, I'd do it one more time. And I did not pass the certified exam the first time I took it. And I failed the blind tasting. So I had to take it again, the entire exam. And I'll be damned.
You did it.
I was studying that blind tasting, twice a day for almost 2 months leading up to the exam.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, look where it brought you.
Yeah.
Now, I read about, is it Dozo?
Yes.
So now that's a sushi bar at the back of Tender Mercy. And now you've been working on pairing sake with the sushi.
Correct.
So how different is it with pairing sake to sushi versus wine with other dinner foods?
It's very similar, but it has been a very intimidating and humbling process for me. I obviously had to study sake for the SOM exam. However, just the nuances in the way you experience sake and the way we talk about sake and partially how it does pair with food is a little bit different. So it's been an adjustment, not to mention a language barrier.
Yes.
German wines have always been super intimidating to me just because of the different words and qualifications and categorizations. And sake is a very similar thing. And so learning the difference between Junmai and Daiginjo and all of those things, it's been a little bit of a hurdle. And I finally feel like I'm in my stride where I kind of understand formulaically how it works, what to look for in certain sakes to pair with certain elements of sushi. So I'm hitting my stride and I'm feeling more confident and I'm having a lot more fun with it. But in the beginning, it was super intimidating and it was a lot of trial and error. And woe is me, I had to try so many sakes. My life, it's the hardest.
Well, somebody who's not afraid to join the Peace Corps, I can imagine deciding to tackle sake. You're pretty brave.
Thank you.
Now, so you said they're coming up with a new venture called Three Birds?
Correct. So they had the former owner of Carmel's in Kettering reached out to the owners of Tender Mercy and Sueño and said, hey, I'm ready to retire. Do you have any interest in taking over? So they purchased the building. It needed some updates and upgrades. They're keeping some of the same kind of mid-century charm and kind of leaning into that heavily for the new concept. But it should be opening hopefully in June.
That's amazing.
It's been a long process.
So are you allowed to share what the experience of Three Birds would be, or is that still top secret?
For sure, yeah.
Okay.
So the menu is kind of new American, very approachable, but still high quality ingredients like you would expect from the experience at Tender and Sueño. Definitely a little bit more family focused. It is in Kettering. It's surrounded by the community and the neighborhood. So keeping it super family friendly is definitely number one. We're going to have the same quality of cocktails, wine, and beer, but just a little bit more approachable and accessible. And the patio that
it's an attracted, amazing patio.
Yeah, it really is. And I know that's what attracted a lot of people to Carmel's, and they are keeping the patio. I've had a few people message me saying, I see that they're doing construction on that patio. And if they get rid of it, I'm going to be so sad. They're not getting rid of it. It's going to be even better. And they have this huge, beautiful tree that's actually going to be growing through the center of the patio.
Very cool. So as a mom with two young kids, as long as they have chicken tenders, I'll be there.
Yeah, they are going to have not just chicken tenders. They're going to have a full-fledged kids menu that's going to be high quality. None of that previously frozen stuff. So
awesome. And then moving on to the vision for Swoon. Is that the name of the bookstore?
Correct.
So you'll still be selecting the wines to be served there as well?
Yeah, this time around, I have a business partner, which is really amazing. She has about a decade of experience on the retail side of things. So she's going to be spearheading the book selection. And then I'll be in charge of the bar part of the business. So I'll be selecting the wines for that. We actually did apply for a full liquor license. So we'll have cocktails and beer as well as non-alcoholic options. But the space is a little bit smaller than Joy. It'll be a little bit more intimate. but we're keeping it super cozy. Couches, comfy chairs. People will be more than welcome to buy a book and a glass of wine and hang out for a few hours and chill and read.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned a good thing I was thinking about. So not all our listeners like to drink alcohol. So you do have a nice non-alcoholic selection at Joy Wine.
Yeah, we do really pride ourselves on that because there has been an industry shift recently. I think I have theories as to where it has come from. But one is that everybody went a little hard during the pandemic.
Yes.
And trying to reel it back in and refocus on health and good routines. However, we're still social creatures and we still want to go out and have that sense of community and be able to socialize with our friends and loved ones. And you shouldn't have to do that and feel pressured to drink alcohol. So we've got a few house-made non-alcoholic cocktails, non-alcoholic beer, wine. We even do our own house-made Italian sodas from local ingredients. And yeah, you also mentioned small plates too. So it's very easy to come in and grab a charcuterie plate and even just a water or non-alcoholic wine and have a good night.
So, and another thing that on your menu, not just the charcuterie, talk to me about these deviled eggs. Is there a skyline chili deviled egg?
Correct. We have a few staples on our menu that we just kind of rotate different styles or plating or presentation. Charcuterie is one of them. We'll always have different types of cured meats and cheeses coming on and off the plate. And then the deviled eggs is our other staple. It's kind of funny that we've become known for deviled eggs. Never thought that would happen.
Welcome to the Midwest.
Yeah, exactly. So we started doing the Skyline Chili inspired deviled eggs a few months ago and have had other recipes that we've wanted to switch it off and people just get irate. So we are taking those off in a few weeks. So come get it while it gets good.
Oh my gosh, yes.
But they're so good. It tastes just like eating a Skyline chili, like a Coney dog, but there's no chili on it. It's obviously just the egg. There's no hot dog, but we do use seasoning blend that's very similar to what they're using in the Skyline chili. It has the diced onions. It has the finely shredded fluffy cheddar cheese and the oyster crackers and the hot sauce. So it's truly the experience.
I love it. I love it. Well, we appreciate you sharing your passion with us today. One last thing I wanted to talk about, and we call it Joy Wine, but there is a definition on your website of where the name came from. Do you care to share?
Yeah. So you had mentioned that this had been a long time coming and I'd thought about it for years and had a few different ideas for a concept. I initially wanted to call it Funk Wines and in reference and homage to the fact that Dayton is the birthplace of funk music, kind of wrapping in my interest in the music industry, and it just didn't feel quite right. And I remember searching for a name and I had read an article online that was words in other languages that don't have direct translations into English. And one of the words that was on that list was jouissance, which in French is something that brings physical and intellectual delight, and immediately was like, That is my experience with wine. Yeah. It's such a cerebral experience when you drink a good glass of wine because you're picking out all of these nuances and you're paying attention to how it makes you feel. And, you know, you might have a sip of a wine and go back 20, 30 minutes later and it's opened up and it's starting to show different flavors. And it is a really fun, thought-provoking experience. And then it also does make you feel good.
It relaxes you.
Exactly. So I really love that connection, but it's Dayton, Ohio. I'm not going to call a business jouissance. That's very ostracizing and it's a mouthful. So started to think of how I could take that concept and shorten it. So the first four letters of that word, J-O-U-I, it's like, oh, I wonder if I could just shorten it to that and maybe even just pronounce it joy, keep it super easy. And then found out that the verb jouir and the infinitive in French means to enjoy. So it all just kind of seemed to fall into place and have references still back to the fact that it is a wine bar.
Just like your journey to owning a wine bar.
I love that.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. I encourage you guys to check out Joy Wine. Let's give me the address again.
117 East 3rd Street.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being with us, Lauren. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor.
We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Lauren Gay from Joy Wine. Lauren's journey from a passionate wine enthusiast to the founder of a thriving business is truly inspiring. Her commitment to innovation, sustainability, and community has set Joy Wine apart in the industry. Despite the challenges of navigating a competitive landscape, Lauren's dedication to building strong relationships and fostering a collaborative environment has been key to her success. As Joy Wine looks into the future, we can expect exciting new products and engaging community events that continue to reflect Lauren's vision. Stay tuned for more inspiring stories to come. Until next time, cheers!
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the NextGen Podcast. To learn more about our team and to join our exclusive educational events throughout the year, check out our website at advisors.ubs.com/Energen. If you have any suggestions on episodes you'd like to hear, let us know by emailing us at energen@ubs.com. And if you liked this episode, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to hear more. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we recommend listeners to obtain appropriate and independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct our business and that you carefully read agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products and services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.